Hello and welcome to the Majlis, a weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. As you know, we are convening this Majlis with the shortest notice ever because of Nazarbayev's announcement on January 25th to reform Kazakhstan's administrative or governing structure. Since the announcement was just made, we know what we know, and that's not very much, except that he wants to transfer some of his powers to his cabinet. The rest is questions, and we have lots of them today. Luckily, we have a very competent panel to dive into all these points. From Astana, Kazakhstan, we have Ida Schlager, who does lots of reporting on Kazakhstan for various German media as a freelance reporter. Ida, welcome to the Majlis.
Hi, from Kazakhstan.
And also from Kazakhstan, Novat Besenov.
Hello, from Almaty.
Novat is the Kazakhstan reporter for BNE Entelly News. From beautiful Glasgow, we have Dr. Lukan Cesci, who is the chair of Central Asian Studies at the University of Glasgow. Dr. Luka, welcome to the Majlis.
Hello, Mohammed. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you. As always, Bruce Panier is tuning in. He is in Prague and edits Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi. Bruce, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. I think it is relevant to recall Bruce and Dr. Luka's famous revelation of late last year on apparent efforts by Nazarbayev to exit from an active politics. So we will also be talking about that report in the light of recent changes in Kazakhstan. So today, swimming in the uncharted waters, we have a lot to talk and a lot to learn from each other on the go. So please feel free to amplify, expand, or disagree directly with points other guests are making. Please don't wait for me to prompt you a question so that we have a lively debate today. So with this, floor is open to our guests from Kazakhstan, Ida Schlager, Novat. Please take us through what changes are in the pipeline.
Oh, may I answer first?
Sure.
I'm sorry, Mohammed, but the question for which are the amendments, it's quite quick. Maybe I can shortly tell you what happened. So yesterday, the social media went quite hot in the afternoon because there was an announcement by a different state-led media here in Kazakhstan that there will be this huge announcement of Nazarbayev in the evening. And of course, immediately there occurred discussions in social media and so on. And to be honest, I had the quite courageous idea that he would like to announce to resign.
Oh.
Maybe you can call me naive, but all is possible, I think. But actually, it was not so courageous what he did. And to my view, this speech was quite short and not so specific as we expected when he told in the beginning that there are some changes to the constitution planned. And of course, he presented it as an idea of himself, and it will be discussed until the end of February. And maybe no, but you can say something about the planned amendments.
Yeah, I know it.
Yes, I agree with Ada that those announcements, they were not bold enough, and I agree with Ada too that should President Nazarbayev announce his resignation, that would be a very, very bold step towards reforms in Kazakhstan. What I can see from today, the government published proposed amendments and addenda to the constitution, but what I can see is only some light cosmetic changes to how to the relations between the government, parliament, and president. When people talk about President Nazarbayev's transfer of some of his powers to parliament, I'm not that optimistic about how important those power-sharing proposals are.
But can you be a little bit specific what kind of power-sharing are we talking about here?
In the past, President Nazarbayev used to appoint or suggest a lot of government appointments himself. Now he he would be suggesting, say, only head of the government, candidate for prime minister, and reserves a right to appoint defense and foreign ministers, and say appointment of prosecutor general and justice minister, that those powers to suggest candidates would be given to parliament. And to me, that when parliament is staffed with representatives of the ruling party and other loyal parties, then this just formality, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, anything to add to these points?
Yeah, sure. There is some stuff I'd like to add. First, I absolutely agree that this business of giving Parliament more say in the appointment of government officials, of course, is absolutely it's meaningless. It kind of reminds me of the same thing we saw in Uzbekistan, where the party that won the most seats in Parliament was able to choose or nominate the prime minister. But the party that had the most seats in Parliament was always the same one that nominated the president. In Kazakhstan's case, it's Nur Otan, and we know that party was created to keep President Nazarbayev in power, the overwhelming majority of seats in parliament. So that's really not much of a change. The thing that struck me the most about the proposed changes that he said was he was going to allow parliament to have more powers over the regulation of social and economic processes in Kazakhstan. That's very interesting because those are the areas that they've seen the most problems with in the last 18 months. It's almost like he's passing off the responsibility for the really hard stuff that is unpopular. We know the economy's taken a hit because of the fall in the price of oil. We've seen over, last year that it was a big problem in the country. The national currency, the tenge, lost about half its value in just a couple months. And of course, that sparked protests of various kinds in the country. And again, these are the social aspect of governance that he's passed off to Parliament. So now Parliament's responsible for the hard economic times, mm-hmm. and Parliament's responsible for the hard social problems that they're facing right now. Mm-hmm. And Nazarbayev ends up with the stuff that has been going well for pretty much the whole time he's been in power. Foreign policy. Well, he's a master at that. He's talked to foreign leaders. They host international conferences, all kinds of things like that. Security going fairly well. There was some dubious claims of terrorism last year. I personally am not convinced that it was terrorism. But anyway, security by and large is fairly solid in Kazakhstan. So, like I said, all I saw in it was he passed the really problematic aspects of governance to parliament and kept the things that were working under his power.
I just wonder, what is the model he's working on? I mean, do we have any such example of government structure anywhere else?
Well, I mean, he said in his speech that there was no one model of governance, and every country had to figure out for itself, what its true path was and how to get there. So again, that was kind of a vague statement.
Dr. Luka, we know a lot yet to be clarified, but from the points that we know at this stage, what strikes you among the upcoming changes?
Well, I think we need to make a step back. Like when in 92, 93, all the Central Asian republics got out of the USSR and began implementing their own institutional establishment, the reforms, introduction of what they call democracy, we realize that the selection of strong presidential system in virtually all the five was actually an instrument to facilitate the transition between the Communist Party and the emerging dictatorship. So in that sense, institutional choice was really placed at the very heart of the former government and their choice. And Anthony Nazarbayev yesterday has done exactly the same thing, but not for the first generational leader, rather for the second. So in that sense, he has somehow acknowledged the fact that it's not going to be there forever. So that's, I think, is an important issue which must be discussed, I reckon. So recognizing the fact that his time may be up rather soon, he determines another institutional path, which is very sort of complex, which we never seen anywhere else, which is deeply flawed as well, to determine what's going to happen after him. Uh-huh. This doesn't mean that we're going to see democracy going on there, but it means that Nazarbayev is not only, if you want, steered the very first transition of Kazakhstan, is now also steering the second one, which is an exercise in power preservation, yet again.
Ida, you kind of touched on this before. Tell us the feeling on the ground. What is the local reaction to these changes? What people are talking about?
I kind of agree with Luca. It's quite interesting. It's a quite interesting a moment because I think it's always so easy for us for us Western journalists to say, oh, all is bad. There is no democracy, and so on and so on. So this is quite an interesting point to say. Okay, at least there is something moving. There is the president recognizes that there has to be a change, but. Also, regarding what Bruce said, I had a brief look at these amendments, and for me, it seems to be really cosmetic. And the same reaction I found in the media, in the in opposition local, media or opposition. Slightly critic media. Uh-huh. I think people don't really believe in a change because there is another point I would like to put up. He would like to make the impression that he would like to include the population. But as you already said, the last developments in Kazakhstan absolutely don't show this. So in foreign politics, they are quite brave and they are now stepping up to another political level, like with the Syria talks in Astana this week. But the interior politics are a bit frightening, I would say. So this is quite interesting, and the population, the people see more this interior politics and the results of this interior politics that activists like in Aktau, the oil workers who are striking now, or the trial against the activists because of the land reform. The media, the planned media law, which shall be changed. These are very, very critical things in interior politics, which makes it quite difficult, I think.
Hmm. So, Novot, what is your thinking? So what does this change bring to the administrative or the governing system in general? I guess my question is, the day after these changes fully implemented, Nazarbayev still remains in presidency. He is still the sole decision maker. So what changes in his day-to-day job and responsibilities?
I think hardly anything would change because you can't imagine a person who's been ruling the country for 25 years just step aside and watch what the government is proposing and what parliament is agreeing or not agreeing with those proposals. It's as Bruce has just said that in Kazakhstan has been experiencing a very serious crisis in the past 2 years maybe. And I think all this is part of destruction of public opinion to real problems. And if you notice in those proposals, they are also not only transferring powers from president to parliament and to the government, but also changing the formulation of who can now own property in Kazakhstan. In the current edition of draft of the constitution, it specifically says that Kazakh citizens own property in Kazakhstan. But in proposed amendments, they say each, which does it include foreigners or not? We, in April and May last year, we saw huge protests against sale of land to foreigners and lease of that land, farming land. So this aspect of amendments, I think, also very important, because perhaps by suggesting other amendments, government is trying to change property relations in the country.
You know, I do understand all these pessimistic opinion about the changes, but some people also, probably this is coming from the state media, kind of trying to interpret this as a first step towards a parliamentary system. Bruce, does it carry any truth in?
Ooh, that might be stretching it a little bit, you know, as a maybe a baby step on that path. I suppose you could say that, but you know, like I said, even the big guy himself has said that the system is going to remain strongly presidential, and the changes, the proposals that they have now really don't move them much very far forward on any kind of transition to a parliamentary form of government. In fact, I don't see that happening really under the second or probably third president of the country. It's certainly not the style of leadership that we've seen all across Central Asia, not just Kazakhstan. You know, and even then, you know, getting back to what they did say, okay, let's say that they are trying to move toward a parliamentary system of government. As we know, there's only the three parties in parliament, and one is Nazarbayev's party, and it has most of the seats, and the other two are pro-presidential parties. So, you know, in this kind of situation, what would it mean to have a parliamentary system of government? It would be that in name only, I would think, and still totally subordinate to the executive branch of government. So you could call it what you want, but at the end of the day, it would still be one guy making most of the decisions.
Dr. Luka, from the points that were raised so far, is it seems that what prompts Nazarbayev to make these changes seems to be to divert the attention of people to something. Is there anything else do you see behind this?
I think that the time for succession is coming. It's coming very slow. I mean, Bruce said baby steps. Yeah, very, very, very little baby, like really, really little steps. It seems to me, and we've seen that in the last 12 months, it's sort of almost a glacial pace, that things have been changing to the elite, that different positions have been reshifted in order to create an establishment that is somehow more conducive to preservation of power in the post-Nazarbayev era. We've seen with this, I mean, you could consider yesterday's statement as the legal complement to the kind of change we've seen the last 12 months. Again, this is not going to lead to a democracy, but we have to recognize that the actors on the scene may eventually change, even though the play will always be the same. It's a very authoritarian one. So it's a very, very small and little, if you want, instance of change. But I think that we can confirm this is the transition going on.
Thanks, Dr. Luka. I think the secret behind all this might also lie in the question that why it is happening now. And I think most importantly, where we are heading from this point, as Dr. Luka, you said. So yes, a lot to talk about, and we will continue doing so shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today we are trying to make sense of Nazarbayev's recent announcement to transfer some of his powers to his cabinet. Joining me in the discussion are Ida Schlager, German freelance reporter based in Kazakhstan, Novet Bisenov, Kazakhstan reporter for BNE and Telenews, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi, and Dr. Luka Ancheschi, chair of Central Asian Studies at the University of Glasgow. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Let's dwell on this a little bit more. Bruce or Dr. Luka, earlier I gave reference to your story of late last year on Nazarbayev's efforts for an apparent exit strategy from an active politics. So I guess my question is open to both of you. So what were some of the obvious signs that that would indicate something like this was coming?
I'll let Luka go first.
Okay.
Oh, thanks, Bruce. Well, there's nothing obvious, but because it's Kazakhstan, you know, like it operates still in a very seclusive, if you want, opaque way. There was nothing obvious, but Bruce and I have been looking at sort of a series of appointments, a series of statements, a series of declarations made in the last 12 months, and we've realized that the new government, and that must have been around September, October, am I right, Bruce? September, October, the new cabinet was really almost tailor-made to steer a transition, to organize a transition in a way in which Nazarbayev doesn't make power. For us, of course, the most important change was Sagintayev replacing Maximov and putting an ethnic Kazakh at the top of the government was actually the sign that the population had to somehow come to terms with the fact that there could be someone else in power very soon. Or maybe that was just a vehicle for change. So things probably got accelerated a bit with Karimov that. I mean, I got different meeting, sort of feedback about that. Some people say, well, Nazarbayev didn't really care. Some other people think, yeah, that really shook him. But what we realized is that towards the end of the year, there was this sort of somehow confirmed situation in which everything was getting ready for some change. Yesterday's declaration, it's not really, I mean, especially for Bruce and me, who wrote that piece, it's not surprising in the sense that we knew that the change is coming. What is surprising, perhaps, and that I'd like to hear your thought about this, Bruce, is that I would have thought that Nazarbayev would just go and say, I'm going to name this person my successor. With what we hear now is the establishment of a presidential system, or sorry, parliamentary system, which is a very hybrid solution, which changes everything without really changing nothing. So that probably is something which I didn't expect.
Bruce, obviously, the floor is open to comment on what Dr. Luka has suggested. But to continue Dr. Luka's point, how we can relate his recent reshuffles in the top leadership with the announcement he just made? I guess my question is, when we put together the recent changes in the top leadership and the announcement he made this week, what does this say as a package about his intention?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm on record as saying that I think he is working toward a day when he will call a press conference like he did yesterday, and it really will be the announcement that, you know, I've been leading the country for more than 25 years. You know, things are going fairly well. Certainly, if you compare what's happening in Kazakhstan with its other Central Asian neighbors, you'd have to say Kazakhstan is an outstanding success at the moment. He made the cabinet shuffles in two parts in September. And, you know, at the end of December and early in January, he made a couple other little shifts, you know, that didn't get the kind of publicity that the September changes did. But certainly, you know, I mean, there were some changes in the presidential administration, for instance, which were kind of under the radar, but he brought Murat Tajin back, for instance, who's been a longtime ally of his and was serving as the ambassador to Russia more recently. But, you know, this is a strong loyalist and someone that Nazarbayev has been able to depend on. And by putting him, I believe his post is deputy chairman of the presidential administration at the moment now. You know, he's going to play a big part in drafting these new constitutional amendments. And he's going to make sure that you know, this is whatever changes they do agree to and put forward are going to be something that's absolutely in keeping with Nazarbayev, with Nazarbayev's best interests. But I do think that given the nature of the man, the fact that, you know, Karimov died when he was 78, Nazarbayev's going to be 77 in July, that Nazarbayev figures that, you know, he's trying to put the last big shiny stars on his term as president. Once the economic situation starts to turn around, and there's a couple other big events this year, they're hosting the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, Expo 2017 is coming up in the summer, so I think he's waiting for some of these things to get behind him, and he's slowly building the model of government that he wants and the people in that government that he wants in place that are going to guarantee his future when the day comes that he finally decides that he's going to announce that I'm getting on in years and I'm turning this over. He keeps talking about the younger generation, you know, about how you need young politicians. I think he will turn it over to the younger generation. Should he do so, as I believe he will, he seals his place in, you know, not only in Kazakhstan's history, but really sets a model for other presidents that you can leave power and still be alive and not be run out of power, you know, and with really the best wishes of your people. People will respect him for years and years to come because he has done a lot for Kazakhstan. So he's building up a government that he sure is not going to totally change direction once he's gone, that's going to ensure his safety, his family's safety, you know, those things.
I mentioned this at the beginning of the discussion that we will be in the uncharted territory, so we remain there. Let's go to Kazakhstan. What is the local feeling? Does it sound at all that he might be leaving the active politics soon sometime? Novak?
I don't quite agree with Bruce that he, president, might be announcing his resignation.
Or maybe he is preparing for such a strategy in the upcoming future.
Yeah, he might be thinking about it. But again, as you said, it's uncharted waters. We don't know what might or what might not happen. But I don't think any talk of transition or indeed successful transition of power in Kazakhstan is possible without sort of steps towards democratization on the ground, for example, without free and fair elections to parliament, allowing opposition parties to operate and stand in the election. And with when people talk of increasing power of parliament, I think if our parliament becomes fully fledged parliament, which can think for itself, not stuffed, as Bruce said, with three pro-presidential parties, plus nine appointees from a body which is appointed by the president himself. So I think when Kazakhstan will hold a semblance of democratic elections, then we can be sure that Nazarbayev is thinking of or is setting off the process of transition.
Ada, anything you want to add in this?
Yes, for me it's quite a surprising, sorry if I'm saying this, how serious you take these planned amendments or these planned changes. Maybe I'm not right and I'm not an expert for constitutional law or something like this, so I might not really understand what these slight changes in certain articles and paragraphs mean, but there were some examples of a very, very smart strategic and tactical play in the past. So Nazarbayev, he always was really good able to play this game, to play democracy. Maybe now with this weakness of the West, it's not so necessary anymore to play democracy for the Western countries. But I think he knows tactics and strategy very, very well. And why shouldn't he use such moves right now? This is for me the question. And as I already said, I think the time to distract people from the real economic problems is good. It's quite good enough to distract them from their economical problems, because people do have economical problems. After these devaluation moves during the last 2 years, it's quite difficult. The prices for flats and for property, they've fallen down. And I see that people are not really interested in politics. And that's why they don't take serious this speech from yesterday. This is my impression.
Mm-hmm. And now I think...
Mohammed, do you mind if I just jump in here?
I think you should. Yeah, please.
Yes, you're right, Ed, that the people don't really care about politics. But the politicians care about politics in this case. So I think that you are right, again... If we look at the process and as the first step towards the introduction of political change, democracy, yes, you're right, we shouldn't take it seriously. But if we look at the process as an attempt to preserve authoritarianism while the president is alive, then becomes very interesting. Because so far in Central Asia, power has been transferred either by revolution or, like Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, the president's dead and someone steps in from an elite appointment. This could be a new, if you want, chapter in how power is understood and digested in the region. So I think that provided that we all agree that there is not going to be any qualitative improvement in Kazakhstan's governance, this is a very interesting process because it shows how the regime perpetuates itself while the leaders is alive. And this hasn't happened yet in the region 25 years.
Yeah, yes, I think it's true, of course. And I have to admit, all this reshuffling during the last month, I don't exactly understand this. Maybe Bruce, with your experience, you know all these names from the 90s, from the early 2000 years. Maybe you could better explain it. What does this reshuffling mean? Is there something going on? Is there already a successor? Do you see already a successor?
I wish I could say I did. I do see one. I think that probably Nazarbayev has a better idea of who that would be now at this time than he did 6 months ago or a year ago. Certainly, he's packed the cabinet with a bunch of people who are absolutely loyalists and put them in positions where he can really count on them. I mean, moving Maximov over to be the head of security is good. Maximov's been with him for a long time. He was with his alleged Uyghur background, roots. He was never going to be able to be president anyway. So he's a good person to be head of security because he can watch out for Nazarbayev and his family. And moving Tajin back over, although admittedly the position that Tajin ended up taking was because of one of the people in the presidential administration was apparently caught disclosing state secrets, Maliyev. But, you know, we laid out in the paper, Luca and I, a while ago, too, if you look at some of the people who just got appointed in government and trace their roots back, you end up with Nazarbayev almost all the time. Somewhere along the line, these people are all linked to Nazarbayev, you know, even going back to like the 80s. Sagantayev, for instance, is married to the daughter of one of Nazarbayev's mentors from the Communist Party in the 1980s.
And who become
so these are the kind of people that you're looking at that are being packed in. That to me shows that we are looking at some kind of succession. And if we talk about transition, I think Luca brought up a good point. I wouldn't suggest that we're talking about a transition of the political system at all. We are talking about a transition of the leadership within the same system that we have right now.
Interesting points. But unfortunately, we have to conclude the debate. But final notes, two questions that I cannot avoid asking. In this scenario, in this case, so what should we expect to see next, and when? Who wants to take this question?
Dr. All right, well, I'll go first real fast. One thing, it's not just us that see, or some of us that see that there's questions of succession in there, and I think a lot of the elites are aware of the fact, whether it's Nazarbayev deciding that he wants to step down voluntarily, or whether it's Father Time taking him, that he is going. And there's a race right now that we don't see, and that we probably won't be able to get a look at. But if you're in the elites right now, you're moving. Because you know that your chance or something, either you got to be able to defend yourself or take advantage of the situation that's coming. And we're going to see a lot of people shuffled around, moved out, possibly arrested. We've seen a couple of those lately, too, because the fight for power is on.
Okay. Dr. Luca, if you want to add something that is good, otherwise, my last point would be like from the last announcement, did you see anything which relates to Darika Nazarbayeva, whether she benefits from this in any way or her son?
Well, if you believe the rhetoric there's going to be a parliamentary system, then you realize that she may. I don't see a direct benefit, but I'm still one of those who believe that she will not be her father's successor. In any case, I think that the great winner yesterday is the elite, because the elite got to the point in which the president was publicly admitted that he's going to be in change. So that's a big sort of significant event in the history of Kazakhstan, right, 25 years. Nazarbayev went public and said there's going to be some change in the system. And this is the preservation that leaves the same people in power. So I think that if not Dariga, the other people are really happy. And as Bruce said, they're moving because this opportunity don't come very often. Well, once every 25 years, I think you understand. So it's going to be super interesting from now on.
Great stuff. Well done, guys. Thank you very much, Dr. Lukan Chesci, chair of the Glasgow University Central Asian Studies, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi, journalists from Kazakhstan, Eda Schlager, freelance reporter for German media in Kazakhstan, and Novat Besenov, Kazakhstan reporter for BNE and Telenews. Thank you very much for your time and thoughts, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you too.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.